How long have you been in the States now?
10 days.
10 days.
How's it? Really good.
You been a road warrior or what?
Yes, 3,000 miles so far. What? In 10 days.
Where have you been?
I land in LA. I drove to SAC the day after. As soon as I land, I start the seed project because I come in here to make a seed project. So as soon as I land the day after, I make the first reversal because I have, you know, a 10 days window to do it. So as soon as I land, I make the first reversal spray, hit the bubble gum because I'm coming here. I'm reversing the bubble gum. So reverse the bubble gum. After that, I'm being a rod. The day after, directly visit Humboldtkind in Humboldt, Eric, see his farm, and he was harvesting some nice plants, some new phenoent he's doing it too. Give him a new seeds, a lot of new seeds for him to hunt for this season and full term, and see how he's going to come for the wash and the return on the hash. The day after, we drove down to Humber Valley, Reading, visit Rob at Humber Valley, see his facilities, visit all the teams, see his two facilities even, and give him some new seeds again to phenohunt, and see a few pheno, see his entry for the Olympics, and see a lot of good things interesting at Humber Valley Rob facilities.
Coming from Europe and being in the industry, you guys have been in business 30 years you've been doing this?
Yeah, we celebrated the 30 years last year.
How are you seeing the difference between facilities in Europe compared to what you're seeing in the United States?
Yeah, here it's way more professional. Then in Europe, we have only the Swiss. Now the Greece coming, Portugal a little bit, and now Holland with their 10 license. They can have big facility to grow. We have in Macedonia, too, a few big facilities growing medical cannabis. In a kind of like heart of state facility you have here, really good, with all GMP and GACP and really good manufacturing building. But overall, here, the level and the quality and the involving of the team, the knowledge is way more than what we have in Europe on the big scale.
On the big scale in Europe, are you seeing a lot of like the guys that came from the culture kind of going into that direction? Because you kind of see that here in the United States where a lot of these guys that have been doing it in bedrooms and basements kind of scaled up and are now producing large scale commercial with licenses. Are you seeing the same thing in Europe, or is it more bigger companies, corporate companies, kind of like a little like Canada, or these, you know, more corporate ran guys haven't grown cannabis
in? Yeah, all the big facilities in Europe fail most of the time. Yeah. Like 90% of the company and big facilities in medical is going to fail. And after, they're going to call someone like me or someone knows the industry. They all hire someone from Canada or Israel, big agronomes, they pay super expensive and they fail.
What do you think, you know, from those guys coming in from other crops, big ag or tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever, going into cannabis, what do you think their biggest challenges are?
No, the thing is, we need this guy to scale up. Because us as cannabis grower, we never grow at big scale as this guy growing. So I think the best combo is to have an agronome on site and to have a cannabis expert like us on site and to work as a team. That's how I get the best result, even on working with the University of Wageningen in Holland with Doogie, my partner. He was there all the time and I was advising by distance. And we have Philip, which is a master agronome. He can grow even vanilla in greenhouse in Holland. So it's super expert on growing any kind of plant. But cannabis, he didn't know. So without my help, on tell him how to make a good phenoent, how to growing, and how to harvest, how to dry, how to cure, we get a fucking nice result. But as a team, alone, it was just fucked up. And me, myself, if you put me in the same situation as tomorrow, like this huge greenhouse, I never been into it, I will fail.
Yeah.
The same as him.
Process and workflow on big cultivation and scale, utilizing that team, but when it actually comes down to growing a quality product, I mean, you're running a consulting business now. What are you really helping these big facilities? Because you're doing Greece, you're doing Portugal.
Switzerland's big.
What's that?
Switzerland, one of the biggest I make now and have the best results so far we've been into.
What are you finding they're utilizing your knowledge for mostly when you're going into those facilities?
The work and knowledge about the plant. Because most of the people who work into this facility don't know, or most of them didn't even grow before. They maybe have one person inside know about the plant.
Like that's actually knows how to grow cannabis.
Exactly. The rest is just theory. And they have read book or see documentary, but they don't even be into.
Yeah, starting from ground zero, which, you know, after 30 years or however long.
The chance I have for Switzerland, though, it's they was growing CBD before. So it's kind of similar, not even if it's far from the quality and the way we're growing, but it's kind of the grow the plant, feed the plant, how she's react by the light, the hair, the condition. That's they have a little bit how it works. At least they have this in mind. So it's more easy for me to explain exactly what we need, the condition for the night, for the day, reduce the humidity at the ends, really important, stop the double layer production for flower. For example, keep this for veg, but stop for flower because we have so far a big issue. In all these big facilities, the problem, my big problem is to save. First, to save the crops they was losing from the first consulting company or bad team they have employees before me. Then, to restart ground zero, say, look, you forget all what you learned before and we're going to restart it from zero. And now we go on my way. And what I have so far from Switzerland, like you see in all the video I send you, we double up the production. Before they was using Metrop, they was foliar feeding every 2 days the plant. They was treating the plant at least twice a week with any product I didn't even know that can exist on the market. And overfeeding the plant a lot, consuming a lot of nutrients. I reduce, I change, I put Athena, just working with a program and easy.
Working with the Athena program?
Yes. And I put them Athena program and SOP and the book. My advice, now we double up the production. They don't have to feed anything by foliar. Only the first week of veg till the first week of flower stack once a week. Only once a week, no even high PM, because it's a GMP facility and GACP. If we don't have to spray, I don't want to have to spray anything. So we just spray stack on veg till the first week of flower, and that's it. Just use the program. 3.0 EC, 6 pH most of the time to 6.2. That's it.
What are you recommending? Are you recommending a lot of what we've kind of put in the book? Are you making any variations to that irrigation strategy?
Yeah, it's too complicated for the first time for this kind of, beginner, I will call them, to directly start with feeding and P1, P2, P3 and reach a really a nice irrigation strategy. But I have my own way to do it. And we talk with Michael, it's not like a special way. I talk with Jack a lot about it. And so I just ask them to have 20% runoff on the feeding in veg till mid-flower always and have like between 20-30% dry back.
Super simple.
That's only what I ask them first to get good results.
Yeah, and so they can get
they can understand how the plants feed, why the dry back is important, why the runoff is important, and how to correct, not too hard and never overcorrect if it's too low, the pH or the EC, and just go slowly and smoothly, and then it's all good. And so far from feminized seeds to clone to seed production is just amazing. How simple it is, how it changed the life of even cleaning the tank or keeping the tank clean and all the lines clean. And I just myself in my own garden on seed production change from since 1 year in full irrigation, cocoa, Athena.
What you were doing organics before Athena?
Yeah, only.
What,
since 20 years.
You've been doing organics for 20 years?
Only. Hand feeding and bio, organic, all the way, only.
What was like, I mean, doing something for 20 years and then making a change to Athena, like what sparked that change? Because that's a big, you know.
It's a big change.
It's a big change.
Jack is a big reason for that. So big shout out to Jack. You can really say thank you to Jack to put me on Athena. If not, I will not change. That's because he's really pushed me to do it. And I see how he's professional. And yeah, I can just have a try. Because he was really pushed me and asked me. And I said, okay, are you really going to do it? It took me a year, though, to change. He gave me the full line and I wait 1 year to change.
You just let it sit there?
Just wait and see. I was like not, you know, still on like breeding and my plant, all my mum. For me, it was a big thing to change. Because if I change, I have to change for everything.
Yeah.
My clone, my mum, and my production of seeds, and even my production when I make the pheno hunt and my entry for cup.
Yep. When you were growing organic, what was your process? Were you doing beds? Were you doing pots?
Pots. But I was mixing my own soil, bringing two different kinds of soil, mixing with amendments, with Trachoderma, mycorrhize, with azos, with mycorrhize from biotaps as well. I was breaking up a few tablets of biotaps to make some nutrients. I have my own recipe since long time. I find a really good balance on what I want, mixing in the soil. And after, I was only feeding with a base, Biocana veg and flower, and their BioBoost. Okay. That's it. And using their only the Biocana line, basically, just their BioRizo, BioVega, BioFlores, and BioBoost. That's it. And I was flushing for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
To 1 month.
Yeah, but you had that organic amendment already into the soil, so you can flush for 3 weeks, right? I mean,
I want all my plants to be just full yellow when I harvest it. I don't want any green leaf.
Yeah.
On my plant when I was harvesting. I run a full senescence and cut it when is the right time to cut.
When going from that step from organics to Athena, how did you start the transition? Did you go from clone to veg, or like what did that look like? And then what media did you switch to when you went that?
So I still have all my mum at the time I switched. All my mum was in soil still. And all the rest I switched to cocoa, 2 little cubes of cocoa.
Straight cocoa.
And I feeding all the mums. So I talk with Jack because I was worried to switching all in powder and mixing and switching everything. So the recommendation of Jack was using the blended line for all my mum as I'm hand feeding and I don't have a lot of runoff. I cannot really collect all the time and it's a little hard.
Mm.
So he told me, use a blended line, I 2.0 EC, for all my mum and my clone. And that's what I'm doing so far. And the thing is, the difficulties for me is I have more than 75 different genetics in my library.
Wow.
That's the basic.
Yeah.
Without adding all the new selection, all what Michael and Aiden bring me every 3 months, like all what we do. So I have so many new genetics and all the oldies, like all the AZs I have from back in the day. I have the Neville selection, A5As, C5As, Ashplant As, Neville As, cut. All these is super difficult to feed and to keep healthy.
Yeah, even nutrients between 75 genetics is extremely difficult.
So blended line 2.0 is the shit. That's everyone's happy. Everyone's green. All the stems green. Even with the LEDs, I'm using only sunlight LEDs in my garden, and it's just been so great so far.
And you're not
before
worried about
my
runoff.
Brother, because I'm only working with my brother, and my brother taking care of all the mum and the veg. That's really his things every day on a daily basis, 7/7. And he's using only Athena, and now he can really say thank you. He wins so much time on just making the preparation.
Yep.
Before, we was making each bottle different for each plant, pretty much.
Oh, my God.
Because the AZs don't like CalMag, for example, too much. Don't like really much silica. They really like low EC. 1.2, that's the maximum for AZs, basically, normally, before. Now, 2.0, she's happy.
you're just feeding one thing to all your moms. To
every mom.
And it's working.
Can be
great.
A Skittles, can be a A5 Haze, can be a Champagne, can be a Grease Bucket, can be a French cookie, can be anything.
To everything's EC happy. Line.
Yes.
Are you making any adjustments to the recommended feed charts that we recommend, or?
I feed every day on hand, and that's little cube.
Okay.
And it's all fine.
Just the Athena blended line to EC.
Yes.
When you transition from organics,
and the other thing, sorry to cut you, the other things, that's no more PM since I'm using Athena. Was a big thing before we have in Spain. It's super humid, and even more in Barcelona area. And most of the plant, like OGs, Whitefire, the Gelato, all these kind of plants take the PM like easy, crazy in veg.
Why do you think you lost the PM now?
Athena.
What do you think? It's the nutrients?
The nutrients. I switch. I have different garden. Mm-hmm. Even on the garden, on the basement, where I have a backup, where most of, I tell you, the Whitefire, Gelato service, I have a few cuts, that's the one gonna shit take the PM and spread to the other plant. Normally, most of my plant didn't have. But I have two or three really like sensibles gonna take in no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I have to treat this plant hard normally. Since I'm using Athena, even though without IPM, I don't need to. I don't have.
Yeah. The tissue of the cell walls of the plants have obviously...
Way more healthier.
Yeah.
The leaf, they're way more thinner. And like, yeah, you can see it's way more healthier.
Yeah.
In everything, even for my cutting. The Z cut now in less than... Yeah, I have 10 days of full tray roots.
When you're doing your cuttings, are you feeding blended or proline?
Blended.
Blended.
Yeah.
2EC?
Yeah.
2EC to cuttings, yeah. Blended line.
Yeah.
Working great.
Great.
Yeah. Are you using ProLine and flower or blended?
Yes. So all the production I have for seeds production, it's only with ProLine now.
Okay.
That's all the production. As soon as take out the mum's room and leave and going to veg and flower, it's only ProLine at 3.0 EC.
Super simple.
Super simple.
Now, when you're transitioning from doing organics for 20 years, what did that transition look like going from, you know, pots to media to, you know, feeding? What did that look like and how did you do it?
So on pots, I was hand feeding every 2 days my plant all myself. So I know exactly what they need every 2 days. Now with the cocoa, I have 1 gallon cocoa pots and I'm feeding every day to get 20% runoff. And have my 30 to 40% dry bag the first 4 weeks of flower. Then I go to 50% dry bag till the end, like till week five, till week 10, because I push 10 weeks for seed production. I'm going 50% dry bag and still 20% runoff if I can.
So you pull back, dry back a little bit more. Do you do that to kind of stress the plant a little bit more?
Yeah, and to have less humidity level into the room too, because we have less big space than you guys have here, so I'm always worried about the humidity. And with the LEDs, I see like they have less hot. So, you know, I need like to really like to be sure on the dry back and what I have, that's the best combo I find.
Dry out the room a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you see going from what you were using before to Athena? Because seed production is, we haven't really talked about seed production. On what did you see with that transition?
Before I have like per light, I was producing with a double ended between 600 to 1000 watts with 10 plants to 12 plants per square meter. I was doing an average 10K seeds per light.
10,000 seeds?
Table, yes.
With organics?
Yes, on average.
Okay.
Can be 7 if it's a cookie, for example, and we like small birds and big seeds. That's all the plants going to produce different seeds. So on average, I was doing 10,000. But now with Athena and the cocoa and all the combo I have now and I make more than 20,000.
20,000 seeds per light?
Yeah, more.
My gosh.
Last time we made with Michael... with Seven Light, 145,000 seeds.
140.
And that's all on different strain, though. And we have Cookie, we have Sherbert, we have Grease Bucket, Champaya, Rainbow Belt, Z. Even the Z was fucking huge producer on seed when I was not expected that much Z on the half table.
What do you think?
And we beat on one single plant 5K seeds on one plant. Last time. So it was like, how? Yeah, on one table, we have 12 plants. So one plant give us fucking 5K seeds. The Pink Pandies Cross Amarillo we just did, 5K seeds. So it's just impressed.
Over doubling your seed production, what do you think it is?
And simple. And that's it's automated. When before, I'm breaking my back every day, watering my plant, have to see if they need or no. Now it's all automated. My plant is way greener till the end too. I was struggling before the last 2 weeks in organic and in soil to keep it more greener, no burn the tip of the leaf. And really, I need to really push the plants to ripe the seeds. Even the Z, I have to push to 10 weeks. With Athena, I never get that green, that color, and that ulcer till week 10.
Yeah.
And keep that easy. But I have to tell you, I reducing at week 7, I'm going down to 2.6, not 3. I stopped 3 at week 7. Like end of week 6, I going down till week 10, and I reduce like by 0.5 EC every feeding.
Okay, so about week 7, you start dropping a half EC every week?
Yes, every tank. So I'm making a new tank every 2 days.
Okay.
So I'm making like 2.76 the first one, then 2.4, then 2.2, then, you know, 2.0 to 1.8.
Yep.
And I stop 1.8, 1.6. That's my limit. I never go down than this till the last 5 days. Then I put straight raw water.
Okay. Last 5 days, raw water. But
only, but that's for seeds production.
Yeah.
If I was making flower production for smoking and sell my flower, I will do 10 days flushing.
Okay. Are you using fade or no?
No, for seed production, no.
But
flower. I'm using for flower in Switzerland.
Okay.
We're using fade, the entire program with fade, even in Greece now right now.
In Switzerland with fade and Proline, how are you finishing? Are you still flushing in that big facility in Switzerland or?
The last 3 days.
Last 3 days.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yeah. Last 3 days.
That's no big deal.
And they have a really great result. We have all the analyze, super clean.
Yeah.
Even after the extraction they made, it's all really, really good.
Yeah, nice.
They're super happy. They win a lot of money on nutrients to switching from some different brand.
They made a lot of money on...
On winning, just not spending on a lot of nutrients they was using before and products they was spraying on the plant too. So this was terrible.
Yeah. No, it's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
What are you doing out here now?
That's Phenoant. Sorry to catch you. Switzerland, that's Phenoant. So like you see, we spread like 4 different seeds. We have more than 3,000 seeds feminized for 4 different strains. On testing and another part of this facility, we have a big phenoant room. When I phenoant at again, 4 strain, but 100 regulars.
So how big of phenoant, you're doing phenoant hunts in that Switzerland facility.
Mm-hmm.
And how big of hunts are you doing all at one time?
Because now by the time I'm done with the phenoant, we need to produce something. So we produce some feminized seeds and that allow me to test some new seeds. So we're testing 3,000 feminized seeds and that's just making oil for the THC medical market for Switzerland.
Yeah.
And then I make my phenoant. Now I'm pretty much, as soon as I get back, I'm come back next week. The day after I'm landing, I'm going to Switzerland harvest the phenoant. So we're going to have some new strain just harvest. The next day I'm come back from Cali. So I'm super excited to see the result from Switzerland because we have really good result. And then we're going to produce this result of phenoant for the production for the medical market.
Will you bring those phenos that you're hunting into TH seeds and
I can
offer them to the market?
Yes.
Do you,
of course.
Yes. Is there anything like, do you usually, you know, offer everything that you're doing to the market or do you hold some things back?
I hold a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You kind of have to.
Yeah. And the thing is, I just get two kids recently. So I have to step back a little bit from the releasing and get out a lot of things. And we opened the vault on the regular seeds at Spanabis 2 years ago. I give the possibility to a lot of growers to have access to a lot of things I was not releasing before.
That was this last 2024 Spanabis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now it's like we have so many good things coming for this next year. Like, I'm super excited. Now I'm going to release a lot of things I was hiding. And I think it's time for the market to see all that. And that's why I was in Cali too, because I think that's really the time for, you know, the public to see all what we was hiding and working on some. So
more collaboration.
Way more.
Yeah.
We have a lot of collaborations coming.
What are you doing out here in the United States? You're like a legend. You're a legend in Europe, right?
Thank you.
For crossing and pheno hunting and seed production and genetics and breeding. But what are you doing now here in the United States? What do you have going on?
So I make now a seed batch with Symbiotics in sac, reversing the bubble gum and eating a lot of things. So we have a lot of collab coming, even with Sogarmi. We have this Blue Mosa and Pink Zaza coming with the bubble gum. I collab with Serge. We have the Ace Anana cross London Pound Cake. I'm going to cross with the bubble gum. The UK cheese cross London Pound Cake cross with the bubble gum. We have cross with Dank Syndicate, Ed Benzi, Zazul. What else from him? Zobcut. We have Rob from Amber Valley. A lot of collab coming with Rob from Amber Valley. I cross his lemon cherry pie with my pure Afghan. His bad root with my pure Afghan. Now cross with different runs means. Cross with Champaya. Cross with Amarillo.
Are you bringing a lot of these cultivators' genetics into your breeding facility and then crossing them there then giving them back out?
Yeah, I give them the half of the seeds.
Okay.
And after they can hunt and do whatever they want. If they want to release and sell, they're open to do it.
Yep.
I think it's better to keep in-house until we find a good thing together and release something together. And I think it's more powerful to do that way.
Yep, for sure. I know you.
And take the time and no rushing. As soon as we done something, that's always what I'm doing. Even with Shiloh, I was doing this in the past for any breeding we do. With Serge, being the same. He gave me the first seeds like 5 years ago when I was helping them. And I just landed in LA and I was thankful and lucky. They was just harvesting the London Pound Cake Kush Mint pheno hunt they was doing at the time at the cookie facility. So I get my hand on a lot of unreleased cross just with numbers and help them to pick up a few phenos, a few numbers was really good. Just to see and before, only if I think was just smoking this and burner in private and figure out what's going to be the berry pie and all the new lines they're going to release. So it was fire. And at the time, he gave me the seeds. So he gave me a bunch of seeds.
Burner did?
No, Serge.
Serge, okay.
No, Serge gave me a bunch of shit. Like okay. All across he have at this time. And so I just came back in Europe and pop all the seeds he gave me. Find a fire male, find a fire female, keep this and start to breed with. So I have the London Mink Cake come from that. I have a male I still using now from this pheno hunt.
Have you done a lot of work with cookies at all or pheno hunted any of those crosses?
No, just with Serge.
Just with Serge?
Yeah, just with Serge.
Okay, so that's how the connection is.
Exactly.
What are you doing with, I know you and Ivan were talking at Jungle Boys. What are you guys working on? Are you working on anything?
I give him a lot of seeds. So now you have in his hand. I think Roach popped some. So let's see. I hope I'm going to see the facility maybe tomorrow or so.
Or today, maybe. We'll go down there.
Yes. So let's see. And I see they have a new breeding facility. Roach sent me all the new rooms they have. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do. I do like a lot the white gummies. At Spanabis, he gave me a bunch of shit they was not releasing yet. So the white seeds? Gummies. No, no, the weed.
Weed, oh, cannabis.
Yeah, Ivan gave me a bunch of jars, like the white gummies, Zowers, LCZ, Candy Cartel number 19, Candy Cartel number 54. Still have all in my mind. The best was white gummies so far. LCZ was amazing. A perfect blend of gelato and Skittles, but exactly what you expect from a Runs Cross, which it was, really gelato solid Z. That's exactly what you want. Like the structure and the smell and the looks, amazing.
How much do you focus on effect when you're pheno hunting and doing these crosses? What made you pick the white gummies over everything?
The experience.
Experience. The experience, the effect.
The effect, the flavor, the taste, how is smoke, how is burn,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah.
Was just on point.
Checked all the boxes.
No, the thing is I want to smoke more and I just want again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I said. And the first thing I asked Crotch, please keep me a jar.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, because I want to smoke some more. You know, and from what it is, what is the cross? The first thing I ask, even this, that what's the cross? Even that's the best, and what it is, what genetic it is to get this result.
Yeah.
That was my first question. Yeah. And after, can I have some more?
Yeah. So you're originally from France.
Yes,
and,
Paris.
And you, how did you get into the cannabis industry in France? How'd you start growing?
I started smoking at 11 years old. I was super young. Just hash with some friend that entered the first year of the college in France. That's like 10, 11 years old. That's when you go to the really college. And that's where you really have like 3 hours and like more freedom as a kid. And I was always staying with kids older than me and doing shitty shit. So I smoking early on at 11 and start to sell hash at 12.
Wow.
And have the first like beeper and tattoo, like we have the first beeper and the first number and after with the text, the beeper with the text and start like that, bro. And at 14, we have a lot of issue in our neighborhood, a lot of like kind of gang things and a lot of like people like get shoot in my neighborhood. So my parents take the decision to take us out from Paris and go more South France, where it's more chill. In the region where you make the cognac. It's right near the vineyard when they have Courvoisier and Hennessy, all these big cognac brands. That's I was right here. And my brother, I have an older brother than me, have 4 or 5 years older than me. So at this time, he was 18. 18 French, you have a driver license. Most of the time when you get 18, you go to Amsterdam. You have a car, take 4 friends, drive to Amsterdam and have a weekend. And so they see what they have to see and do what they have to do. He bring back some weed with him and I find 1 or 2 seeds in a purple, like old maybe Jamaican purple weed at the time. And I try in my garden, just a little pot and try. It was not really nothing, but I figured, I said, oh, I can grow some weed myself. After maybe 2 years, I was 16. One of my best friends in this area come from Chile. And I see his father growing some weed on his backyard. And we were studying a few branches, but like in July and drying was just leaf and shitty. But I say, oh, that's why you have a lot of box with like dry bud, like shoes box in his bedroom. So we sneak a few bud and I say, okay, that's really great. You know, you can grow outdoor, it's free, the sun, water. And I say, okay, so I really started at my parents' outdoor houses and going from there.
What was the change from France to Barcelona?
I have a big evolution. In France, I've been outdoor, growing big outdoor. After at 17, I get back to Paris with my older brother. So I leave my parents and I say, I don't want to stay here. I want to just come back in Paris, be in my neighborhood and do my shit. So since I'm 17 years old, I live with my brother or alone. I'm not stay with my parents. So I was with my brother doing a lot to Maastricht, doing a lot to Amsterdam, just start to find like the best skunk, the best K2 at the time. We have access to a lot of good weed at the time. I think was even Shanty and Neville was growing South Holland in 99, and that was the time I was always in Maastricht 99. I was maybe once a week or even not twice a month minimum in Maastricht buying weed and coming back to Paris. And later on, I own a grow shop in France. I opened a grow shop in France,
which is
indoor hydro shop, 1 hour from Paris, because I don't want to open in my neighborhood. So I was driving every day 1 hour to open my grow shop and come back to my house and still have a grow in my apartment. And I set up different apartment and have different grows. So after work, I have still to drive and go and watering and was hand watering, all organic still. Selling good weed in France, good price, making was good money. And starting to take my weed, go to Amsterdam and sell my weed to Amsterdam coffee shop to not like be around and not be on a French market and like be more safer. And they pay me more expensive on a coffee shop in Amsterdam. So I was driving to Amsterdam and go to Hack Times and present my weed to everyone and show to even Aya and Soma, everyone like, oh, my weed, Sour D, Last Age. And so first of all, I meet Dougie at Tietz, like 2010 at the Hack Times, 11. He said, oh, it would be great if you can enter some Last Age in a competition for us on Tietz. I said, okay, great. Still grow in Paris, my weed, and I was driving down to Spain, my entry of weed myself.
Yeah.
I was driving Paris to Barcelona, was around Barcelona, the Bio Cup 2014, driving my weed and giving in hand myself the night before the competition. And I win first with Last Age, with my first selection, first really like intent on really good. And the judge was Howard Marks, Mr. Nice, Shanti Baba, Karel from Super Sativa Seed Club, and one other dude, really good grower, like the Jorge Cervantes, but younger from Spain. So I was super stoked to win first and have my first cannabis cup from these legends. And the second was Tenji from DNA. So I beat Tenji DNA. So it was not even like a small cup. Because I say, okay, Tenji was big, was just starting to be big in 2014. And I say, okay, I really have something. And on the back note of the cup, I have a little note from Shanti with a happy smile and say, oh, like how many kilos did you produce? And it's really good. So I was stuck. I said, I really
that
have something.
That gave you the motivation
exactly.
to take it to another level.
And so enter again was in April. Again, enter in September in Expo Grow in Irun, win first again. Enter in the Hack Times Cannabis Cup in November, get the highest THC result from Hack Times. And we didn't win this year. But the thing is, we be a little fucked because in Sativa, in 2014 Hack Times, first 10G DNA, no, Crockett, first 10G Crockett, second 10G DNA. Third was maybe, I don't know, Phenofinder with Amnesia Bubble or something like that, if I remember correct. And we get fourth. Like Danny Denko tell us, oh, that the first time the highest THC strain didn't win the Hack Times. But how you can win first and second with 10G when DNA and Crockett, they are the same.
Do you feel like, you know, doing so many cups and being involved in so many competitions, do you feel that all of them are completely transparent? Like, as far as like
being nowadays, it start to be more.
Nowadays,
yes.
But back then, it was a little bit kind of who you know.
Back in the day, I don't think so. I think it gets by the time, though. I get it get corrupt by the time.
Mm-hmm.
When the cups get big and after it's really big when you win something and the coffee shop scenes too. So I think it gets a little bit corrupt. Yeah, I think it gets a little bit corrupt at the end. That's why you lose a little bit the reputation. Spanabis, I don't think so.
No, it seems like
Spanabis, I was judge VIP, you know, and I was judge most of once. And I don't think so. I think it's really transparent. The quality of the entry is really big. The last year was 55 entries just for Indica. which is a lot.
Yeah.
And you have growers from all over the world entry at Spanabis. You know, American and all Europe scene entry. So that's, I think that's a good competition. The Ego Clash, I think it's one of the best for me. Ego Clash and Spanabis.
The most honest.
Yeah. The one, the best honest before was Expo Grow. For me, the best cup ever made in Spain and the most transparent was Expo Grow Irun. Because every hunt, if I enter in Sativa, I'm judging Sativa. Mm-hmm. I'm judging all the rest of the entry. I send in my entry and I receive a kit with all the entry of the rest of the Sativa. So I know exactly in front of me what I have, if my entry is correct or no. And at the end of the event, when they give the cup, they give you a little book and you have all the notes from everyone. Who votes you and who votes you good or no.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can even look like, okay, everyone's put me correct. Like, or you can see, I know a few people fuck me. And why you put me 4 and 5 when the other put me 9 and 9 and 9.5? Why you put me 4 and 5?
Yeah.
You can see the people that has them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, that's the best transparent cup ever made in Spain. And the transparency, that's this one.
Yeah. You can feel that when you go to Spanabis, that it's real transparent. It's the culture is strong, like really strong.
Yeah. And we don't really like the fake.
No.
Europe don't like the fake. They don't. We don't like the fake.
Yeah.
That's the problem with, like, I talking on the previous podcast, like the America faked the world on all the rename and all the shit like that. That's just terrible. Even here in America, I know people didn't even smoke the real Z still. Didn't have access to the real Skittles cut. Thinking they have, they don't have. Think they have the real Gelato 41, they don't have. They don't have. So when in Europe, they tell me, we smoke good Cali. I say, no, you don't smoke good Cali. You smoke Cali, but you don't smoke good Cali. The good Cali, it's even hard to find in Cali. Even the Cali market doesn't have access to really good quality all the time. They have,
yeah,
but it's hard to find. So how you in Europe, you can smoke the good from Cali? No. A few people in Europe smoke the good because they know the good plug. In here, they're going to find the good weed and send over the good weed. But it's a few people. No, most of the people.
Yeah, you've seen that kind of become really predominant of just like this normalization of just changing names of genetics and then saying it one thing when it's another. You don't see that in Europe?
For me, I see this in a seed game. All the fake seed banks popping up every year at Spanabis. You have a new seed bank popping up and 2 years after disappear. So we have so many seed banks doing the same shit. The white label and renaming and changing the name for the same seeds they're going to repack.
Yeah.
So we have exactly the same issue.
Yeah.
But it all starts from here. If a fake name starts from here, then it's going to follow for all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Out of all the cups that you've won, out of the 30 years you've been doing this, what is the one that you're most proud of?
I think Last Age at the Bio Cup, because it was the first one, and Spanabis. Spanabis 2016. For me, one of the biggest year was 2016, as I won Spanabis first with Underdog OG. When the second was Cali Kush Farm with Karma stuff, like strong OGs. And the third was True Cannabis with Chem Valley Cooks, with like crazy Chem cookie on point.
Yeah.
So won that cup that year was huge.
Yeah.
Super huge. So, and the day after I won Legend of Hash with the hash entries
entries. You won first?
Second.
Second.
Nice. Second. And the VIP judge, and second on the public choice.
Yep.
So when the VIP judge has Sam Skunkman, Bubbleman, and Tony Verzura. So it was, for me, the three big hash head at the time. And so win that cup. The first time I enter, first time I go, and I won. So the day before, won Spanabis, one Legend of Hash, and maybe 2 weeks out of the 420 was 1 month after, I won Elite Cup, first with Underdog, and second with another strain. I took 3 cups at the Elite Cup too that year. So I took like 5 cups in 2 months.
Yeah.
So it was huge.
Yeah.
So it was a good year, and Underdog OG is a really good cut too. Really good. It's a cut from JJ basically. We get like back in the days. Amazing.
Yeah. I don't think people, I think a lot of growers do understand, but there's a lot that don't, how big it is to win Spanibus. I mean, it's like the way I look at it from the outside coming in from being from the US, I'm like, if you win Spanibus, it's the pinnacle. Like
yeah.
It's winning the Olympics. To
me, the Champions League. The Champions League.
Am I off basis on that? Is that pretty accurate to say?
Yeah, is that the Champions League of the cannabis?
That's the world globe. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't go higher than that.
No, if you look soccer and you like soccer, as you guys like football, for you, that's for us, that's win the Champions League, and you, that's winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You know, for us, that the Champions League has soccer most like culture, and you guys have a football culture, that's win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or win the NBA All-Star.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's huge.
We have all the best players like the NBA All-Star. We have all the best grower player in the industry is going to enter at Spanibus because they won that cup.
Yeah.
100%. You know, because everyone can have access to that cup. That when we people ask me what cup I'm looking for to win, the only one missing that Emerald Cup and Ego Clash. That's the only two cups I didn't win in my career. I won't try to enter Emerald Cup, even if it's now it's a little less, you know, on the good moment, and the event change, sadly. But I think the reputation
you
still
have,
there.
You have seen a change in Emerald Cup a bit?
It isn't in November anymore. It didn't happen like it was before, the celebration and all what it was.
Harvest.
You know? It's too much. With the legalization and all that, like I think back in the day, it was really, really the best event we have for the cannabis, even better than Spanibus. But now I think really Spanibus take over this kind of really like gathering of cannabis internationally with everyone's coming.
Yeah.
And I don't think any other expo in the world can take that.
Yeah.
I think it's already been too long.
The flag has been planted.
Yeah, it's been like 15 years strong. And since 2010, the cannabis scene in Barcelona, we say the capital of cannabis of Europe is Barcelona. It's not Amsterdam anymore. It's really Barcelona. And Berlin was really good in June. Mary Jane was really amazing experience and really good. But I don't think Mary Jane's going to replace Spanibus.
Yeah, I couldn't. It's.
I was thinking in first, though, because legal is legal when Spain is not. It's in June, so it's more summer vibes, kind of really, really good. But you don't have all the club scene you have in Barcelona yet. So I don't know how the club scene is going to be in Berlin. By the way, we're going to open two THC clubs in Berlin pretty soon.
Flower.
Soon. We're going to make the production. This THC club, I'm taking care of the production. As soon as I get back, we start the facilities. It's going to be all set up, all grow with Athena. And we're going to put all the original breeder cut on the fucking menu.
What are the laws in Germany right now? You're opening two stores.
With partner. We have partner in Germany. They're German.
Okay, and they're retail stores.
It's going to be a cannabis club like Spain.
Okay.
Exactly the same as Spain, but we have the production.
Now, what are the square footage laws on regulation of cultivation of cannabis in Germany right now?
It's just you're allowed to grow for your 500 member.
Okay, so it's similar to like Prop 215 California.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the days.
So it's going to be a good...
It's going to be a great market.
It's going to be a great market. It's already booming. Any hydro store, any grow shop in Europe, they sold out on anything.
Okay.
Even the old light, they was not selling. They was hiding things like 2, 3, 4, 10 years. The really old magnetic ballast, they still sell it now because they need shit to start.
With the clubs, you don't have a certain amount of plant count. You just 500 members. Is there a certain?
And yeah, certain amount of gram per member, like 50 gram, I think, per month per member.
50 grams a month per member. And is there any like tracking on that or track and trace, like metric?
Let's see. They just started.
Okay.
So I think Germany is going to track, but you know how plant it is. It's super hard to track plant and a live plant.
Yeah. How difficult was it for you guys to get the license for the storefront?
Our partner get it pretty easy. In Germany, they just apply for it.
Okay, pretty simple. And yeah. Local, probably your local ordinance?
Exactly. Each region have its own...
little laws.
Exactly. So okay. For the moment, we focus on Berlin, which is the capital and the biggest city, and where is more cannabis friendly at the moment.
Yeah.
You have a few towns like Munich. They don't really want to buyer control this kind of thing. They don't want us.
Yeah. Where do you see Europe going in the next 5 years? Like, as far as across Europe, more commercial cultivation, more stuff like Germany popping up. Like, what do you see being the biggest markets?
Yeah, the Spain now is going a little backwards when we don't have the situation really great on the club. They have a lot of red, like you said, Spanabis. They still continue red. They get notice to close a few clubs. The mayor of the town announced one club, the entire 200 club, but this is like between 6 to 2 years. So let's see. But it's been like that since 2009, since the beginning of the club scene. I'm here since the beginning. They try to close, they try to raid, they try to wait you outside and get you and bust a few people. It's been like that since the beginning. And Spanish, they're really hard, mm-hmm. and they fight for their right, and they know they can have it. So I don't think it's going to change. It's just a little down, I think a down years for them, but I think it's going to come up. I think it's going to come up strong. And as facility growing, I really hope. Like now only Holland have 10 licensing and big facilities to grow. Germany is going to grow a lot. I think Germany is going to be the next 2 years. You're going to only hear about like German grower, Germany. They're all going to grow. So really this market pop a lot.
So you think Germany is going to take a big, big portion of market share in Europe?
Now, yes, because yeah. They're going to have the right. That's the only place it's legal.
In all of Europe, that's the only, but...
that's the only place you can go. It's 100% legal. Spain is not. Holland is not. No
what
one country.
What about the commercial facilities in like Switzerland and Greece and stuff
it's
like
just
that?
Medical.
Just medical.
It's just medical.
So it's
for
full
the medical,
recreational,
it's
full, let's go.
Exactly. It's full medical. So all what I'm doing in Greece, all the production is just for sale for the medical market in Germany and England. That's the two biggest markets in Europe now. That's Germany and England. And Germany now, what they do, that's going to help a lot for all these big facilities. Since the legalization in Germany, now a simple doctor can give you a prescription super easy.
No, it's like 215.
Like you call a doctor, you pay $50, you have back, oh, I have back pain, I have headache, I have insomnia, I want cannabis medical. It just gives you a prescription, pay $50, and you go, you have an application on your phone like Weedmap. You look, you have like 150 different strains with different name and THC and price. You order and you get delivered. You know where the pharmacy is carrying and you go pick it up.
Did Germany put a tax on it?
On the medical market? Yeah, of course.
Okay. What do you know what the tax is?
I don't know. I think it's 20, is it?
20% or something like that.
That's pharmacy product.
Yeah.
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 And so now it's so easy. The medical cannabis market in Germany is booming.
Yeah.
As you guys know, back in the days, Prop 2015 was like, you go in dispensary, you buy 28 gram as soon as you can, even to resell to someone else on the streets. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen in Germany?
Are other areas in Europe going to be allowed to ship into Germany?
Nope.
Do you know? No.
Nope.
So it's just
medical
all...
market, yes. On medical, all they come from Macedonia, Poland, Czech Republic, Greece, Portugal. They all sent to Germany and England. Mm-hmm. But as recreational, all have to be produced in Germany for the club. All what you're going to find in the club have to be produced by the club. So no exportation from America, no nothing, supposedly.
How's the culture in Germany, like compared to Spain? Do you think the cannabis culture is as strong as Barcelona as far as the consumer side?
No, they smoke a lot of weed.
They do?
Do, yeah. Less hash than what we do in Spain. Spain and France, we have a big hash culture, way more deep. Italian, Spain, and France, sorry. Italian is big on the hash culture, so I cannot forget this dude. But all the rest, Holland a little bit, but they're more into the weed. Mm-hmm. Belgium, the same. And Germany is the same. Because they don't have access to the good hash we have. And more north you go, more expensive it is.
Yeah.
So same for like Copenhagen, they have a market and the different. So they have access to good quality hash on different because they have a lot of travelers and bringing Nepalese and Charas and good hash from Morocco. But Germany is super hard. Normally super low quality hash. And they find like weed from Amsterdam or local growers, really good grower. But as German super hard low, you really won't be lucky like friends too.
Yeah.
So the scene is not as popular as it is in Spain because, you know, the law was super hard. But when we've been on Expo, we see a lot of German grower and community really huge and big, but more secret.
With, I know that you do a lot of consulting in Morocco.
Yeah.
Right. What do you...
Since 2012.
Since 2012.
Yeah.
So what, 13, 12...
12 years. Easy. But 12 years, I start like really helping them and bringing seeds from TH Seeds and starting like with 5 different strains, 10,000 bubblegum, 10,000 Saint and Sour, 10,000 Dark Star, 10,000 Critical seed. Hog, all feminized seeds to see which one's going to come out and give us the best return on the hash. Because not all the strains are good to grow in Morocco. And the problem they have, they don't have any knowledge on genetic and what they're doing with their soil. So 13 years ago, they was all watering with sprinkler, starting early morning to watering all day long, and they stop at the end of the day. So it was for me like totally wrong. Like,
yeah,
what you doing?
The buds, what it caused all
so,
kinds of problems.
But they was long races. So they only grow their long races, so that don't... For them, doesn't matter. The chalk is super resistant, hard plant, no really branches, like just a single stink. So it was kind of like really hard for them. But as soon as we start the feminized seeds, so I started irrigation and tank and mixing tank and bringing nutrients and mixing my nutrients and feeding my plant and make a schedule and make one plant each meter on drippers.
In the ground?
Yes. On the mountain. So it was super hard to do all that the first year. Like big shout out to the team, bring me there and pay for all that thing because it was like to listen. To pay for the tank, pay for the irrigation, put this online, listen me and trust me on the schedule, on the feeding with the nutrients I bring them. It was not that easy, but they make jungle. Like big trees on the mountain when normally they're like super little. They was like huge.
And
so they were super happy. So since then, like they always, every year, call me back, different big farm, different families, and I go all over the mountain and try to help them as much as I can for their soil too. Because they was using a lot of big bag of salt. They have like the orange, the blue, and the purple on different NPK range.
Yeah.
And they're feeding all that to their soil. Even if they mix with like cow shit and horse shit and a lot of natural things, they can mix their soil, but still they're feeding with their bad powder, really cheap and shitty. And at the end of the day, it's really bad for the soil.
Did you see what you did on the cultivation side really increase the quality of their hash?
Yes, a lot, a lot. Both the plants by themselves, the health of the plants, totally more, the quality of the hash, the quantity, that's what they look for. It's really the quantity.
And all that hash just going up into Europe. And that's
yeah,
why.
It's all for the world, I will say. That's the 90% of the hash you smoke in the world come from Morocco. So even in Israel, you smoke some Moroccan hash. Even in Africa, but
yeah,
that's really
like
the low grade.
For forever,
they have
Morocco
the low grade.
Hash has been
the
like...
top quality is going to Europe. It's going to Amsterdam. It's going to Paris, it's going to Spain, it's going to Italy. That's the most countries going to buy the best hash.
What's like their extraction method? Are they still doing water hash or is it...
Now they do everything. Before there was only beating. So they beat 15 minutes with a big plate with a certain screen they have, and they was beating by 15 minutes.
Dried flour.
Run. Yeah, only, they dry. Look, they harvest mid-September to end of September for the latest, and they dry until December. They never beat the plant before end of December, start January. They wait the cold.
Oh, they
it's not
cold.
Because they yeah, wait yeah. and they're lazy or doesn't want. And we was like, how why you don't do it before? Because they really wait is get cold and super cold. And now they beat. That's make way more
kinda
sense.
Like, kind of like beating Kiev or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And they're beating and that's for way more. And that's how they get the most return on their plant. If you beat earlier, you get less. That's gotcha. How they figure out too. So when you go in Morocco, you really figure out like, oh, you're thinking sometimes they really do wrong or they're lazy or they work really like in the dust. But to make what they do in their condition, it's like just amazing what they can do and what they have access to. Because most of the time, don't really have electricity stable. It's really like mountain. Humboldt is a luxury front of Morocco. You know, in Humboldt, you have access to a lot of big things. In Humboldt, you have like grow stores, even since long time I'm come here. You have grow stores since long time. People know how to grow. You can have access to big truck. You have road.
Yeah.
Road and access. In Morocco, there's no road and access like that.
You're walking to your
it's
farm.
It's the wild, wild west. So it's Africa. It's not America. It's Africa. So the road's not the same. The truck's not the same. We don't have big truck. They have truck, but whole truck from France. That's Africa. It's a trip. So it's not totally different than here. Even the drip, the irrigation, you don't have access to anything. So you have to create everything. Even in Europe, we have to, you know, the grow market, grow store market are not as huge as here. So we adapt always and find a way to figure out how we're going to do it. But Morocco is like 10 times more. 10 times more.
What kind of like community is like in Morocco growing this? Is it like more, I don't know, kind of gray? Obviously it's gray, but it's, is it like just regular everyday farmers or are they a little
Yeah, no, it's been centuries. So you have to understand you have three towns in Morocco that allow by the book, by the king to grow kif. To grow kif.
So it's legal in Morocco.
It's legal on three town.
Okay.
From history and on the book is right by the king of Morocco. They can grow kif in this region because it's the only things grow and what they're going to survive. So this three town region kind of, they can grow kif. It's right on the book. But kif, not hash. So the kif is a plant and you harvest the plant and you smoke the kif from it. So that it's not illegal. But as soon as you beat and you have hash and you press it, then it's hash. That it's illegal.
In Morocco, that's yes. illegal.
Even if the farm keep as kif, he can have any control of any cops, army, whatever, it's going to be fine. But if he beat everything and keep all in plague and keep all press in his garage.
What else would you do with...
The kif?
Yeah.
They're smoking a little pipes.
Okay,
normally,
so the
back in the day,
fine.
It was a sepsi. The name of the pipes, of Moroccan pipes, is a sepsi, and they were smoking the kif into these pipes.
Okay.
That's
but,
it.
But
that's
you just
what
can't the, push it together into hash.
Exactly. Later on, like some, I think they see from like India and Afghanistan how they do hash over there, and so maybe we can do the same.
And that's where
and,
they got
and
that's
how
where
they
it
get
up.
It and make a block and after make trunks. But even in France, we have the club of Hashishin in 1860 something. So it's been really like more than centuries of smoking hash in Paris. So that's been it's smoking hash from India and Morocco since centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been making this thing centuries. It's really a culture over there.
Yeah.
Even a lot of workers from the south, the poor. People from South Morocco, they know the moment and they all go up north to work, to find some work. Like people even
in
from
Humboldt.
Europe, they was flying to Humboldt to train.
Yeah. Yep.
And that was trippy. Last week I was in Humboldt, they even say, oh, they have only Argentinian trimmer. Like yep. crazy, like
yeah,
hundreds of Argentinian trimmer.
Of South America, it's Costa Rica, South Argentina, Brazil.
2017, have like some French, some England when I was there, and a lot of Chinese.
Trimming here in the United States.
In Humboldt. Crazy, like team of Chinese all over the barns in Humboldt, Garberville, and all over Modern Mountain.
Yeah.
Chinese trimmer all over.
Probably seen that come off now.
Yeah.
Yeah, not as much. What's so with the hash in Morocco, it how like legalities of going into Europe. Like,
so yeah, now to finish, now they make everything. So they beating before, and now they have all like one of the best we have to shoot out. It's Paolino from We Flower. He's one of the first to grow the Barbara bud in Morocco, like big scale, and like take a freeze truck on a mountain and beat the plant and work like on a freezer truck, even fucking burn his face with hash. And make a crazy, like, fresh, frozen, dry sieve, static, clean on a mountain, and bring back. And that's really started, like, okay. And now they do on scale. So you have, like, from one of the, now, the I would say, like, the biggest scene is, like, all the biggest Italian hash maker, good Spanish, good French, don't get me wrong. But the Italian really are, like, artisan hash maker. Even in Barcelona, they take over most of the hash cup. It's Italian artisan hash maker, really like on top of the game these days. And in Morocco too, they really like go there. They have team of like 20, 30 kids, young. They stay there all the season. They grow the plant, they harvest, they fresh frozen. They make the isolator, they freeze drying.
So it's that they're leveling up.
Yeah, they level like crazy. We have some static, crazy hash bricks coming from the mountain. Some really, really crazy. Nowadays, they grow the same seeds as you. They can even like take a lot of 9 weeks harvest, a lot of TH seeds, a lot of symbiotics. It's a big like camp of like breeder fight on the mountain. Who's going to have the best hash strain? So now we team up with symbiotics. A big shout out to Aiden to make the connection like 2-3 years ago. And now we all work together and cross all their shit with my shit, cross my shit to their shit. And we have a big, big cross catalog, big collaborations coming. And yeah, they're one of the biggest hash trends at Symbiotic. Like Michael and Vitz, they're killing it for even the weed.
Mike Village and Symbiotics and you. Are making all kinds of feminized.
Yeah, now we're working together. I'm making all their feminized seeds now for Europe market and even for Morocco, for Europe, even for some America. Like we make a lot of things together. So we cross all their genetic with mine, all mine with their, and all their new with mine. We make phenone together. We hunt on our things. So, it's exciting.
I've heard mixed reviews on feminized and regular seeds. What's your take on feminized as far as being stable?
Nowadays, I won't say like, you can even make mems from feminized. Back in the day, everyone was saying, no, you can't. But the experience say, yes, you can. Because I can see even, look, this dude in Canada. We just talking this morning on Instagram, Ritual Green Cannabis is making selection of Lasage feminized and French Cookie feminized since maybe 4 or 5 years now and running this selection as production for his facilities on big scale.
Yeah, and it's super stable.
Super stable, super good, and he's getting fire. And he told me like, I'm super proud when they can have access to real cookie cut and they're growing my seeds and overcuts and say it's way better. Even the sage seeds, way better than a single cut. So I'm super proud of the feminized seeds we produce right now and the stability they have and how strong they are.
Yep.
So I'm confident enough to say, yes, you can. Back in the day, we had like regular seeds. I will don't breed with feminized selection, but we can keep a mem and make production for flower purposes. Yes. As breeding, I prefer to not do it. If I have to, I do it. Because a clone edit like gelato has come from a feminized. And we all breed with gelato.
Yeah.
So we cannot say, oh no, fuck feminized. Gelato, all the gelato cut are come from feminized project. But a lot of nowadays cuts from America come from a feminized project, and we all work with. So,
but your preference on is not to breed with feminized.
Yes, if I can have even just to reverse, I will not reverse a feminized plant. First of all, to make all the feminized seeds I made, it's only come from regular and stable regular. That's the first things. And after, if I have to rebreed, I rebreed only with regular. If I can have the choice, I will choose only regular.
Regular with regular.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about back crossing? Have you ever back crossed?
Yeah. We do. I do a lot of BX or even like F2, F3, F4, F5s. It depends what I want on the strain and what I expect and what my goal is. First of it, you need to have a goal when you breed something. If not, it's just going on nonsense and it's just the lottery. And I'm too old for the lottery. When you start and you're a young kid, you can, yeah, you play and it's a lottery. For me,
when
it's
more...
When
you backcross, it's a lottery.
No, when you just play as breeding. Now, okay. When you backcross, you need to have a goal. Why you want backcross this plant and what you want improve on her? Or maybe it's better to cross to something and get a good selection of it and recross again with something stronger to get to your point you want to the plant. That depends on the project. Because backcross, it can be good, but for me, sometimes you're losing time on something you're going to find better and just losing your time.
For the community of growers that aren't that familiar with breeding, can you go over like F1, F2, backcrossing, BX1, and kind of explain the different meanings?
Yeah. So when you go and you cross on the F1, you took just the first generation, male, female, from a normal, the first cross, that the F1 cross. Then you take a new male from that selection and a female cross together, you give you the F2. And then on and on and on. So what you do, you just, when you select that, just isolate really what you're looking for, the plant you're looking. So like for the banana pudding, I just stop at the F2 because it's just big banana producer, super strong, exactly what I was expected from the plant. And all what I cross with is banana male, I know all the offspring is going to come with like more stronger stamp, more side branches, little bit more internode, and a lot of resin production.
So you're breeding F1 female, F1 male, and then they, you pop those beans and then you breed the F1 male with the F2 female.
Yeah.
And then you get an F3.
Exactly.
Okay. So you're like interbreeding the male to the offspring.
Exactly.
And what do you look for in doing that? Like what's your goals when you're.
To really have the offspring, the progeny really is going to be as equal as the parents, as not too many variation. When you do that, you really want your offspring always like Karma does with his headbanger. When you pop headbanger, it's only sour OG gas all the way. Tall plant, little internode, it's going to be the same. So if I won't do the same for Lassage, then I just have to do in the same way. And all the offspring is going to be exactly the same. That's what we have today.
Yeah, so you're looking for those same traits.
Exactly. And what you have to put to get most of the things, the closer of my plants, original clone, and not too many variation. When we're releasing F1, like everyone does, you have so many different variations. That's super hard to find something close to the clone only, to the original mummies. Then if we do more work, and we release F4, F5, that what we're going to release, that's something really close to the mum. So as a breeder today, releasing F1, we give way more possibilities and different gene than just isolate the gene we want from our parents.
Yep. Now with BX is a back cross, right?
Yes.
Can you explain BX?
So you select a male and you recross just on the same mother again and again. So you have your mum, you select the F1 male and you hit your mum again. Then from these seeds, you take a new male and you again hit the mum.
Oh, so it's the other way.
Exactly. You just keep always the same memes as receiver all the time and back host with a new mail generation.
Okay, so it's like the opposite of F1.
Yeah. When the or we go F1, you go just always new female, new male, new female, new male, new female, new male.
Yep.
Always improve your selection. You take your best female, your best male from this offspring, crossing together and go forward. So I have the best OG with the best Afghan.
Yep.
I mix together. Then I want the best selection from it and the best male crossing again together. And then at the end, I have an OG Afghan, like super strong. All the seeds you're going to pop is going to be only OG Afghan. No more OG, no more Afghani. Is go in one direction. Your offspring is going to be, well, no matter what, the OG Afghan you want and you have selected. All the seeds going to just be like the mem. That's yeah. What the offspring, when you go forward, F1, F2, F3, F5, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah. The when you're breeding...
back crossing, you can still have something from the grandparents after. When you go more F1, F2, F3, F5, you isolate really the gene you want. So back, it doesn't really like come, you know, came out on the progeny. But when you make a back cross of a male of his mom, you have way more things chance to have things from back.
Oh, you get expressions from the past.
You can get more expression from the past. From
a
mom.
BX yes. Compared to an F.
Yeah, that's what I figure out. That's what I see for myself.
That's interesting.
On my experience.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah. What is it when you breed a brother and a sister together, like off the same cross?
Yeah, that's what I did always for banana. Each of my regular project, I only make F2s, really not releasing the F1 most of the time. So I always select the best sister and brother, what I said, like okay. For London Punke Cushman, the example, when I get from third the seeds, the male I have really similar to his sister, just have a little bigger internode. But as smell, as strong, as fast is similar.
Okay.
So I know on crossing these two, I really going to have something similar on offspring and even more and more on the second generation and third generation.
Okay. And that so when you're breeding brother and sister together, that's comes into
F2s. Yes.
And then you breed those offspring together, that's F3.
Yes.
Okay. And then back crossing.
And
BX.
As soon as you reach F4, F5, it's pretty stable. It's pretty like homogene, like all the offsprings coming really like your parents is.
But
like
some,
the mummies is.
But some crosses, when you're bringing brother and sister together, you're seeing, like for the banana, you got to F2 and you were happy with it.
I'm happy with the male from it so far, yes.
From the male?
Yeah, I just keep a male from it.
What do you look for? What makes you happy with that male?
All the offspring it gave me.
Okay.
The result from the offspring, that's exactly what I want when I cross this male with the plant I select, because I don't cross this male with all the female I have. But like, the breeding is always, I take a direction. If I select this male, it's going with this kind of female. I don't going to put all my female with a male and make all and going to be happy. I'm selecting the one that really is going to for me
so
match.
So you select your males based on the offspring.
Yes. And what I want go and what I want do with this male.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like, oh, this male is good. No, I flower them out to see first if they fast, how they react, if they resistance. Most of the time I post even on internet. I even put them on my roof. The winter, see how they resist during the winter. If they don't go crazy, I put them even in spring and summer, see if they're going to flower fast or no. If they resist to mildew, if they resist to shitty, to, I don't know, caterpillar, and if they resist to anything.
Yeah. So just to clarify this, so BX, back crossing, is taking the offspring and crossing it with the male, the female or the male, the mother or the
back cross to his mom, to his own genetic.
Yeah.
That's the back cross.
To his own genetic.
Yes.
And then F1 is to cross brother and sister together.
Yeah. Right. You want to make your mom stronger on making back cross and just try to isolate really what your moms have and trying to get it better. That's normally what we do when we back cross something. We really want like this one stronger and
looking for reinforce the same express
the gene exactly on this one. And when we go farther, it's to make something better than the original and make something stable than the original.
Okay, so going forward, yeah, it's to make it more, make something new and more stable, and then going backward, or make something new and to go backwards, BX, is to make something more stable.
To reinforce it. Reinforce what you have before. And when you go forward, it's just to make something better, but to be accessible for the public too, because the first breeding project, because you have a clone. The first thing is, oh, I have this clone. I want the public can enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's the goal. To make the seeds for the public, enjoy it exactly what you enjoy in your garden, but not give your cut away. Yeah. That's the purpose of the seeds, basically. Yeah. If I won't take it from the beginning. So if I won't give the chance to my customer to enjoy exactly the French cookie I have, what I have to do? Give my cuts or make seeds? So I make seeds. I choose a good male is going to match with my female first. I cross it. I test the offspring. I see if I'm going in a good direction or not. Sometimes you don't go. You don't like the offspring. You don't like the direction it's taking. So it's okay. Change the male. Or trash. Bean all these seeds. It's not good. Make a new one. Cross another direction. See, okay, I'm happy on that one. We do it again. We're testing. Okay, I'm happy. It's going good. So you can reinforce it, this selection, with the male again. And say, okay, that's my French cookie with my Afghan again. And that's always now when I pop the seeds, what's going to come out. Okay. Now we can release. Now first we test. We send the tester out and we have 4 different testers. I have a tester in England going to test in hydro. I have tester in Tenerife going to test outdoor. I have tester in Holland going to test. I have tester in France.
And you get feedback from all these different growers?
Yeah, minimum 5. 4 or 5. And me, I include myself in the 5. So I'm testing myself and send at least 4 testers on different country and different environment. I want one is growing in hydro. I want one is growing maybe in cubes or maybe a mix of cocoa and soil. One outdoor in Tenerife. So I want all this feedback and everyone's happy with. If they're all happy and myself include, we release. We chase a name and we release it. If not, we never release anything.
How long does that process usually take? To release something.
9 months to a year minimum.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
That's why they just have 2 kids. I have to get back and not release anything for like a year and a half. I can't. If I was releasing, I'd be lying, repacking
then
something.
You wouldn't be THCs, you know?
Yeah.
It'd just ruin your brand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we don't do it, but that's why a minute not releasing much because I was a little bit out of testing in the garden for a minute, so we was not be able to do it. But that's why, yeah.
But now you're back in.
That way. Yeah. We're back in since a year now. That's why we make the release from the selection I made from Fidel. Fidel gave me some seed, the Runcemint and Gemello, and I make selection, recross, happy with the half spring, remake a batch, and we release the seed at Spanabis.
What's your relationship with Symbiotics and Mike? What does your guys' collaboration look like?
We work together now as like partner. We really have a spot together. So all what we do, it's all together. So I have their cut, they have mine on some space, and we do cross all their genetic with mine. Most for the hash market, I will say first, was our first attempt. But now we see all the genetic we have collect between us. I can tell you, I think we're going to have one of the biggest menu at Spanabis. 2025, I think it's going to be a movie at our booth. Because with all the lineup we have, with the Amarillo Reversal and the new now I'm making, I don't even want to mention the name to not get too many people exciting and bug us on the DM, but I have so many things reversing already and it's been in testing just like insane. For the hash scene, for the flower scene, all what we have, it's insane.
Yeah.
And I just, Aiden just finished a testing of the Rainbow Bell 2.0. We have the Fletcher cut crossed with Champaya. I reverse the Champaya from them, which is Mimosa Papaya. It was one of the best hash we just showcased at Spanabis last year, crossed with Rainbow Belt. We have American River Extract, just washed it. I just have a little try last week. I think it's the next level hash. It's like the Oasis Tropical, like, hash. That's amazing. Yeah. And get you high. Where it's normally all the terpy papaya you can smoke all the way, you never really get high of it.
Yeah.
But this is get you fucking high as fuck.
Yeah.
And it's terpy as fuck. Like, you have the Z, you have the papaya, you have the tropical, you have everything in there and the fucking high.
And you were going to release those seeds?
I think so. We're testing the seeds right now. We're testing in-house. We washed it to see how it's washed. And now we have a few testers out. If we're happy of the offspring, yes, we're going to release it.
Did you come up with a name yet? Did you?
Champion Belts.
Champion Belts.
Yeah, that's Michael and Vince find the name. That's Champion Belts.
Yeah. And yeah. It just pure for washing.
Pure for washing. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Even the flower is nice, but I think it's going to be shine way more in hash scene than
flower.
But
it's still, you still see a flower market for it?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. It's huge golf balls. Super frosty and really nice. Even on outdoor birds, she was pretty.
Yeah.
So I can imagine in indoor.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have so many things crossed with their Champaya, London Mink Cake, and the Califung Watermelon. They have so many. And now with Amarelo and the news coming, and mine too. I reverse Bubblegum, reverse the Pure Afghan. We have so many different reverse with their own genetic as well. So by Spanabis, we're going to have
a lot of
testers already test. So I think we're going to come up with a crazy list.
I'm going to have to get some from you.
A crazy list.
Let's
trust
go.
Me. It's really like insane.
What's your bank of haze strange look like?
My bank at home?
Yeah.
Different strain in total?
Yeah.
Now maybe 100.
100 different haze.
Haze.
Yeah.
You mind? No. Different haze, 5-6.
Five?
Yeah. 5-6. Pure haze. I have ash A5 haze. That was Neville selection. The C5 haze, the hash plant haze, the Neville haze, last sage, which is a haze, and the haze anana, which is the Neville Haze Cross Banana I made and select. And I cross this with the London Mink Cake. And now we have with Serge, the Haze Anana Cross London Mink Cake, which is calling the London Haze. So yeah, 7-8.
What do you, compared to, you know, you spend a lot of time in both, obviously Europe and the United States, how do you see the seed markets being... the differences between the seed markets?
You guys... Yeah, the genetic is going too fast here. I would say
stuff's
like,
being released too fast.
Yeah,
it's a little less unstable, you think?
Yeah, the thing is, you have more. So more you have, more you can have instability. The thing is, in Europe, back in the days, we didn't have many seed bank. So there was really like conscient on what they do. Like, for example, Mr. Nice, Shanti, know and teach me how to make the feminized seeds, but never made himself for his own catalog. He's making feminized seeds for bulk, for other company, but not for himself as Mr. Nice. It's only regular seeds and release regular seeds from his own catalog. So Simon was the same, Serious Seeds, was only making regular and just recently start with feminized. Most of the real breeder from back in the day, Sensi Seed, was only selling regular for a long period of time and starting feminized really late. So we don't have many seed bank for real in Europe, real seeds maker. A lot of seed bank, a lot of white label seed bank, but as real seed bank and real seeds maker, we don't have many. So like, I hear it's way more. We have like 10,000 more like seeds maker in America, and breeder like doesn't have the knowledge that all the whole guys we have in Europe as breeder and seeds maker. Grower, yes, breeder, less. In Humboldt, you have some knowledge, but the people don't talk. They're not friendly. They doesn't really like share that much. Then like mountain people. In Europe, they're mostly like friendly and open scene. Like you see, it's more social. We all like small and tie together and exchange and give more advice. So it's more open for us as seeds maker to share knowledge and make maybe less mistake than America. They all rush for the dollar and all rush for the new gelato, new Skittles. They all look for that since 10 years. Since 2015, I come here every time. It's they all look for the new gelato, the new Z. That's everyone's looking for that. They want this new hype. So I think more you're going to cross and less test, more instability, but more chance you can have to find the unicorn. I don't know. That's just here for me, it's just going too fast. Yeah. That's just my thing. It's just going too fast. When in Europe, we like our classic. When here, it doesn't like. So I think that's come from the history. In Europe, we like history and we stick with our history and we really like good shit. It's going to stay forever. Even food, music, art, anything. In Europe, it's fucking stay. In America, it can disappear in a minute. For anything. When in Europe, we have more, I don't like, attached to the history and the classic. For example, Amnesia is going to stay forever in Europe. You can go in any club, in any coffee shop, all over yeah, fucking Amnesia place. Haze. Amnesia Haze, yeah. Critical, Somengo. And now Mimosa.
Yeah, it's...
Mimosa, it's a classic now in Europe.
The Mimosa cut that you guys
no,
did?
No, no. The cut I have, the Michael's cut, that's yeah. The breeder cut. But I mean the Mimosa, the strain, as it is, the name and the selection everyone's made in Europe, it's a classic. Now in every club, you can find Mimosa on the menu most of the time. Coffee shop, the same. As name and the quality of the weed.
Do you think that's affected by the end user? Because it seems like here in the United States, everybody wants new, mm-hmm. right? Is it that same kind of culture for the end user in Europe?
No.
No.
No, it's more the UK market is more like that as really following the America trends and the hype. We want new. In Europe, we want the new, but we want the good new.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be so much new. Want,
exactly. So much new. It's a fake new. It's not like the new. It's not new. It's just fake. Yeah. That's the difference. Then we like the new, but the real new. If it's real new, as flavor, as tasting, as experiences, that's new. Okay, great. But if it's just new by the name and the bag.
Yeah, just new on the hype.
The fake, yeah. In Europe, you can fake 1,000 people one time. But you cannot thank, you know, one guy 1,000 times. So good luck. You fuck one time everyone, but after you don't gonna fuck anyone.
Yeah.
That's how it's gonna happen. And that's, you know, with all the fake.
For you know, for you breeding for so long and being in the game for so long, what advice do you have for, you know, breeders across the industry about just overall breeding and where they're going?
Takes your time. First advice, takes your time. And have a goal. Take a direction. For Eat My Breeding, I have books. I have books of breeding and what I want. So I put notes on what I expect and always put down notes and write notes. To keep notes and track on everything. Like your seeds, when you pop, the health, and take your time. Don't rush the process. The best advice is take your time and trust on you.
Yeah. 100%. I appreciate you making the trip out, man. It was good to talk to you all the way from Europe. It's good to get a different perspective. I think this is the first time I've talked to anybody from your market. or had him on.
Yeah, it was a good occasion, you know. I'm traveling here, so, and we work together in Europe as well, you know.
Yeah.
I receive so many messages. Do you work with Athena? Do you work for Athena? Do you work for Athena? I say, like, guys, it's just good to me. We just working as good, osmos, I call it. Like, it's a good osmos, you know. Like, you're professional, I'm professional, Jack is professional. I have the support I need. I have the help I need. And your product fucking works.
Yeah.
So, and I have the reputation. I really like talk shit and say, you know, if it's work or no, if it's good or no. That's why I was skeptical to try. And look, since I'm trying, I cannot thinking to do it without now for the seeds production and all what I'm doing. So now I'm making a new garden and a new phenoant with Athena. And I'm going to test and see how it's going to come out. But all the new strains so far, they all react good. So I don't see why not. But I'm always testing, you know, new light. I'm testing LEDs light all the time. So I have a new company. I have DLI with their UVA, BC light in between two LEDs, 800 fixture. I have different company always send me things to try and give them feedback. So now the only thing I need to add, the under canopy light, to really see if I can again scale up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you doing under canopy?
That's the only thing missing now on the new trial. So I'm waiting for a few under canopy light to try and really see what is going to give to my garden. If it's going to improve or no, if going to, you know, let's see for the seeds productions can help or no.
What's your favorite top lighting right now?
About
on your top lighting LED, you say you're testing a lot of ones.
LEDs for me, Sunlight so far is the best brand so far. I have so
Sunlight great, lighting.
Yeah. Sunlight. S-A-N. Okay. No sun. Sunlight. S-A-N light.
Okay, Sunlight.
Yes, it's okay. Made in Austria. Nothing is made in China. It's all made in Austria. It's nice side. It's all really professional support. Great light. I double up my production from that with Athena. And look, since I put this, no like problem before with this light. I have problem with nutrients and lacking and always like currencies on CalMag and silicate, anything like the stem like starting to be like purple, super easy.
Yeah.
The leaf more dark green. My brother was going crazy always. What's going on? Cannot like deal with a few like genetics under the LEDs don't like. Since Athena is a fucking jump. It's super happy.
Yeah. What do you think it is about the Sunlight? Is it the spectrum?
Yeah. The spectrum. And look, Sunlight per square meter I'm using now is only 250 watts per bar. So it's 500 watts per square meter.
So 500 watt fixture.
Square meter.
Okay.
Because the two fixtures, the small fixture, so it's two fixtures to give me 500 watts per square meter. And I'm making the double production of seeds when I was consuming pretty much 1,000 watts before in double-ended. And so I consume the half of the watt and produce the double of the seeds.
Yep. Yeah.
Consume way less aircon, no dium. And I'm running irrigation automatic. So it's just like amazing.
On the finished flower with LED compared to HPS, with that new light that you're using, do you have a preference between HPS and LED finished flower?
The HPS have more like swirling, opening kind of a flower structure when LED is way denser.
Yeah.
But if you have a good distance and I playing with like when for the light, first of all, the first 30 minutes is going crescendo. It's never like full light as soon as is the light on. Secondly, the first week of veg, I am 25%. Then I'm going to 50% the last week of veg. I pass to 75% the first week of flower. After 2 weeks, I put 100% of the light capacity. Then on week 7, I start to reduce at 75%. And I leave the last 2 weeks at 50%.
Do you adjust your temperatures as well as your lighting when you're doing that?
No.
No, you just leave it the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you like running on Celsius through flower?
So far, I get better results on colder temperature than hot temperature. So even the Z, I show you picture after, the Z was never looking like that before, and I never have more hot than 23 Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
And the minus was like 16. I was between 16 and 23. The winter run, I never had the run like that.
Yeah.
On all the plants.
Yeah,
cool. Everyone. So now it's full summer. I have pretty much the same. It's happy, but less happy when I have like 28, 29, and the minimum are 24, 25.
Yeah. But you get a better quality when it's cooler.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to keep the water cooler, it's super important too. The water temperature up to 23, for me, it's not good. Like 24, that's the maximum for me. Up to this, you lose like a lot of oxygen in the water. The nutrients not the same.
Yeah.
Your plant doesn't have access to the same minerals. I think it's really fucked up to have your water more than 24 degrees.
Yeah, 100%. What is that? 24
That's C. That's what I see. That's the limit. For me, 23 is really good. 24, that's the maximum. After, for me, it's fucked up.
Yeah, so no more than, 74 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for me, that's really the limit. Max,
yeah.
Max.
Yeah,
if the facility is really hot and your room temperature is like 28, 29, you can maybe feed at 23, 24.
Yeah.
But that's really the maximum.
Yeah.
But for me, the goal is for me to always irrigate with the water between 2 and 3 degrees less than the room temperature.
Okay.
That's always my goal. Never feed at the same room temperature. Always 2 to 3 degrees less. So if I have a room at 23, 24 degrees, my water have to be 20, 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's in always. That have to be always. That's when I'm going facilities and then when I'm fighting in Greece, that's to have my temperature water at this.
Yeah, cost. I kind of find the sweet spot of like, 68 to 70 degrees, which is 20 to 21.
And it's cost expensive to cool the water.
Yeah.
To hot the water, it's easy.
Yeah.
To keep it cool, that's one, it's getting expensive for a facility to keep cool water all the time.
Yeah, you could just keep it in a cold room.
You can put...
If you have the volume...
Yeah. If you have the volume and all that, Europe is all compact and things. So put aircon on it, put some ice on it, try to keep it cool, but we try.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I enjoyed it. And it's great to have a legend like you on. So
thank you, bro.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you, bro, for having me too.
Thanks, man.
It's a pleasure.
Talk to you later.